It's time for 41 is the Mic, a weekly Chiefs podcast with Nick Jacobs of KSHB 41 and Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest. 41 is the Mic starts now.
Hey there, and welcome to another edition of 41 is the Mic. We are joined by a special guest today, Michael Lombardi. Many of you know him from the GM Shuffle, from the Lombardi Line. He's also an author. It's one of the books I'm getting, Gridiron Genius. I got it. I'm going to read it after the draft's over with. It's the treat for myself to hear what this man has experienced, what he's been through, working with Bill Walsh, working with Al Davis, Bill Belichick, working alongside each one of them. Michael, thank you for taking time to join us.
It's always good to talk to Chief fans. I appreciate it. Great respect for the great Chiefs. I watched that horse run around that field way too many times, but as the Raiders rivalry, it's always good to join you guys and talk about it. But I don't think people really understand about the rivalry, why it was so deep between the Raiders and the Chiefs. I wrote about it in my book, Football Done Right. It is that when Al Davis was the commissioner of the AFL, Lamar Hunt founded the AFL. And Lamar Hunt was in Dallas at Love Field in a car in the front seat with Tex Schramm negotiating the settlement between the AFL and the NFL, while Al Davis was back in New York on Park Avenue signing players because the war between the AFL and the NFL escalated when the Giants violated this sacred trust that they had that all veterans were off limits to sign between leagues unless the team declared they wouldn't. So the war started over a kicker, Pete Gogolak. And when that happened, when the Giants basically took Gogolak away from the Bills, Al launched the war. And Roman Gabriel, who just passed away, was one of the players that signed. John Brody, all these guys signed to these huge contracts. Meanwhile, Lamar and Tex were working on a settlement that was announced like 2 days later, and Al never forgave Lamar for that. So that rivalry goes deeper than just silver and black and red and white.
Wow. That's now you've added another book to the list that I'm going to have to make part of my summer reading and hear some of those stories. That's fantastic. Michael, my first question for you is, you've been in the front office. You've been a part of this draft week many years. What are front offices having to deal with right now this week leading up to the draft?
I think a lot of it is just block out the noise because you have a whole section and it's worse now than it's ever been, right? My first draft was 1984 and we drafted a gentleman behind me, Jerry Rice. And, you know, there was one columnist, the great Will McDonough, who was doing mock drafts. There was Joe Bushbaum. There was this drugstore list, if you remember. Jerry Jones, not the Jerry Jones, but another Jerry Jones out of Cincinnati, Ohio. I write about this in the new book too. You know, there was very few noise. There was no noise out there. And so now it's so saturated with this team's going to do that. That team's going to do this. This player is ranked here. That as a general manager at Brett Veach, you've got to stay within yourself and trust what you see. Don't listen to what other people see. And that's a hard thing to do. Andy obviously will do it really well because that's what he does. But that's part of the biggest issue now is getting everybody to not react to the noise.
You know, Michael, we got to see a little bit of the inside baseball, at least, is about how general managers work about trades when the Chiefs took Patrick Mahomes. Because after the fact, you know, we learned John Dorsey had been working with the Bills on that deal for weeks about identifying, you know, where to move up to. How does it go when you're talking and you're, you know, reaching out to other general managers and your colleagues around the league? Even, I know, because even down to staff, I mean, your pro personnel directors are going to be reaching out to their counterparts. How far back do those conversations go as far as, you know, finding out which teams might be willing to trade up or move back and even have, you know, maybe players available that are during the draft?
Well, I think it starts off with the list of who will trade, right? There's some trades you can't make a trade with unless they can absolutely rip you off. There's no team you can make a trade with. And then there's some teams that are aggressive that you know, if you call Nick Cesario, you can make a deal. You call Brett Veach, you can make a deal. You call Howie Roseman, you can make a deal. John Schneider, Chris Ballard. There's certain guys you can. There's certain teams that just really aren't interested in trading. They just want to pick where they pick. So I think a lot of that goes into it. And that draft was, to me, generational in the sense, not because Mahomes turned out to be a generational talent, but Sean Payton was trying to do the same thing. He just couldn't get the deal done. And I think that that trade is going to linger into this draft because I don't think Sean's going to walk away from this draft without the guy he wants.
And, Michael, with the Chiefs being at 32, I know you've had to deal with that when you were with the Patriots. How tough is it to where you want to get an impact player? There may not be enough guys graded in the first round to do that, but you have to try to maneuver a way to get somebody who's going to contribute for you.
Yeah, I think you got to not talk about the impact. I think, you know, Bill Walsh taught us all in San Francisco that the first year will teach him the system, the next year will develop the skills within the system. And I think that's really what it is. And because the year is so long and there's so much time between, you know, May and the and January when the Chiefs are still playing, you're hoping this guy they drafted 32, the second half of the year will make a contribution, you know. And to think he's going to come in and take the world by storm, it's hard to do. It's hard to do from a freshman to a college to a freshman in high a senior in high school to a freshman in college. It's hard to do at 32. Look, I think they want to get somebody who has the traits that they know could be a potential starter. And when you're picking at 32, you have to throw your depth chart out. Like, you're not going to get a corner as good as Snead. You know, you might, but it just might not happen right away. So I think, to me, that's the biggest thing you have to really pay attention to is just pick a really good player that has the traits that you're looking for that fits the profile and the criteria that you've set forth.
You know, Michael, right now, you know, the Chiefs at least have three picks in the top 100. How important is it, you know, especially in a draft like this year, because I know, you know, Brett Veach has talked about maybe in the fourth and fifth rounds, the quality drops off and the players are much older in this year's draft than maybe they have been in the past. How important is it to, you know, get a value in that top 100 versus, you know, trying to maybe get more quantity, being flexible enough to move down or move up if, you know, if you want to get additional picks?
Well, I think that what you're discussing is the horizontal board, right? And the horizontal board is, do you take a corner or do you take the left guard? And they both have the same grade. And so what you're trying to do on the horizontal board is get potential starters. And if you're Brett Veach, that's really all you're going to get. That's what's going to feed to you. To think you're going to get a day one starter at 32 is hard to imagine, especially when most drafts rarely have more than 20 players graded in the first round. The fans have 40 players in the first round. Most draft rooms maybe have 20, maybe. You know, I've been in some that had 15, you know, where they – and when you say first round, there's verbiage that's attached to it, correct? So – you know, anybody can be a first rounder. I could be a first rounder, but if you attach verbiage to it saying that he will start in the National Football League and make a significant impact, you can't attach that verbiage to me. You know, so the verbiage has to be attached to the player. And for Veach, the verbiage will be this guy has the potential to be a starter for us in his second year in the league. And that's a really good pick if he can find those guys. And if he can get to the fourth round and still find that, man, that's utopia. That's great. You know, and knowing that, you know, like one year in New England, we drafted Trey Flowers in the fourth round. We drafted Shaq Mason in the fourth round. We got two really good starting players in the fourth round that contributed to Super Bowls more than what we got in the earlier rounds. So I think that's kind of what you're looking for.
You know, you mentioned that, and you know, Brett Veach had told Nick that he's got 221 players on his draft board, but he doesn't expect he's probably going to get past 150 in the draft. The rest is going to be for, you know, undrafted free agents that they're looking at afterwards. You know, especially you looking at those pockets that you're talking about, you know, you're maybe going to have 15 to 20 players in the first round. How do the additional pockets go? I mean, is it in like another maybe 20 to 30 players that you're thinking of a second round grade? And then how much distinction is there between maybe a third and a seventh round pick sometimes?
Well, there's a huge distinction, right? I mean, now you could, you know, but every board's different. You know, it's a giant jigsaw puzzle. Every board's different. So, like, look at Brock Purdy. They had a fourth round grade on Brock Purdy in San Francisco. And if they don't take him as Mr. Irrelevant, he goes undrafted. So that meant the rest of the league didn't have a draftable grade on him. And so that's the variance that you're always dealing with. And so you may have 150 guys on your board, but you know that, you know, 50 of them may not be graded in the same area that you're grading them. And you just have to be right with your grade. So I think to me, you're hoping to get into the fifth round where the variance is you're still thinking about getting potential starters. But when you get later, you know, remember, we used to draft 17 rounds. We used to draft 12 rounds, and we think we're getting value down there. And so when you're looking for traits, like what plays in the league? Like when you look at Isaiah Pacheco, like he's got size, he's got speed, he's got toughness. Did he have the production at Rutgers that would allow him to be drafted? Not really, but he has traits. And then when you have a coach and a coaching staff like the Chiefs have, which are really good at developing talent. See, this is the key element. This is where football is different than baseball, right? In baseball, the general manager picks the players and they have the farm system to develop them. If the GM picks the players without the head coach's support and insistence on player development, the chain breaks. Like, I'm a really personnel guy if that chain's not intact. I can be a really good personnel guy if that chain's intact, where Belichick or Walsh or coach and the coaches are developing talent. That's where Veach gets such an advantage, because he has a coaching staff that's going to develop the talent. Now, you also have to be realistic and say, look, this guy's not good enough. We got to get rid of him. You know, or like Andy, look, even though we drafted Edward Chalaire in the first round, we're going to play Pacheco because he's the better player.
Now, Michael, if you're in Brett's shoes this week, is there certain players you're looking at, or what are you looking at 32 in terms of maybe trading up, trading down? Where's kind of your mind at with that?
I think if for him to trade up, it's got to be somebody that he could see within in that 20 area, or that he could get to that he feels like could make an impact, right? So we know that they're a man-to-man team. We know they want to play man-to-man team, and they lost their best corner in Snead. You know, and we know McDuffie's a really good player. Is Joshua Williams, the fourth round pick 2 years ago, going to be able to play? Will Watson, the seventh round pick 2 years ago, can he play? I mean, there's some concern there. So he's got to say to himself, can I get up to get Mitchell? What would it cost? You know, and that doesn't mean he's going to do it. That just means he's asking the question, can I go up? Could I go up to get another? You know, because every draft, everybody thinks that every corner's the same, right? Everybody thinks all the corners are the same. Well, Wiggins from Clemson and Mitchell, they're more man-to-man corners than these other guys, right? Alabama, typically, with Nick Saban, always plays man-to-man. But this year, for the first time in a long time, he played a lot less man, a lot less. What does that tell us as evaluators? That tells us that maybe he doesn't think Kool-Aid or Arnold are great man-to-man players. They're good corners, but they might not fit what Andy and Steve Spagnuolo want to do. So if you're Veach, you got to realize, okay, if we don't get one of these guys, what are we going to do? And then you ask yourself the question on how we could do it.
You know, and when you're preparing for the draft, Mike, how much do you look forward to future years as far as how the roster is constructed? You know, for instance, the Chiefs have a really strong 2021 draft class that are going to be free agents after this year, like Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, Nick Bolton. How much do you look at, you know, what your roster is going to look like in 25 and 26 during like the 24 draft?
Yeah, well, I think this. I think you basically, what Veach and Reed are doing is, who are we going to sign? Who are we going to extend, right? You know, they got all this extra cap room that they had that created after they traded Snead away. Well, that cap room is going to go to some of these guys you're talking about. And I think that's where you've made that decision. You know, so you've sat there and said, okay, here's our team. And as if you're the GM, you have a 2-year visual of your depth chart. We got to get this guy signed. This guy's a replaceable player. Like, we could find equal or maybe better value at a cheaper cost. See, everything is time and money. Like, if we let this player go, if we let Trey Smith go and don't match his number, then how do we replace him? And that's kind of what you have to constantly, you're constantly asking that, because you're constantly knowing that, okay, we've made the decision. We're not going to sign this guy to an extension. It's going to be too expensive. They made that decision with Snead. It's too expensive, but they wanted to get a draft pick for him. They did. But you put that in place in terms of how you're manipulating the roster.
Matt, you got any final questions?
I'm curious about, you know, just how you kind of feel about the way that the Chiefs have stacked their roster around, you know, when you're having to deal with Patrick Mahomes' cap number, and then you're trying to squeeze in a Chris Jones, and you're trying to make sure Travis Kelce, you've got these superstars that you build around. You know, how have the Chiefs managed to do that, and especially the last few years building in the draft and making sure that they've got those players that you're talking about as being affordable pieces that you can plug and play?
Well, you know, they find guys along the way, right? You know, they get guys. You got to hit with draft picks, right? You get Bolton, you hit with him. You know, you put money into Tooney. You put money into, you know, Jawan Taylor. You put money into Orlando Brown. That didn't work out. You get rid of him. You move to somebody else. I think it's a constant evolution. And I think what the Chiefs have learned is that you can't pay everybody. And they've won two Super Bowls now without Tyreek Hill, who I think is the best receiver in all of football. But you have to give up something. This is why Minnesota never won a Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins, because he takes so much to the cap room, you have no team left. And where the Chiefs decided, much like the Patriots have done, is we're better off having depth. We're better off having a complete team than having five or six of these three players on offense that we have to pay all this money to. And Mahomes' adjustment to the scheme after the Christmas Day game is the reason why they relied on their defense to win. For all the talk about their offense, their defense is what won them another Super Bowl. And that's because they were able to put players in, develop the scheme, keep Chris Jones, add those two first-round picks to defensive end, get something out of them, and develop it. So I think that's what you have to win with the draft. And I'm not saying you have to hit a three-run homer in the draft, but you got to get players that are potential starters that come in and contribute. And you can develop and are willing to be coached.
And I'll just ask this finally, Michael, and we'll get you out of here, because I know you got to get going. Who are some names we should keep an eye on outside of the cornerback at 32 for Chiefs fans?
Well, I think you got to look at the offensive linemen too, and I think that's the strength of the draft. And I think that's something that, you know, look, I'm not sure that they think Wanu Morris is going to be the starter or Godrick. I mean, the left tackle position is a huge concern, and they've left it open. They haven't filled it. They haven't. Now, I'm sure they probably think they can bring Donovan Smith back at a deal once the draft's over. But at the end of the day, they haven't done any of that. And I think they'll try to find that, you know, in the what tackle could make it to them. Could the Morgan kid from Arizona, who's a very good player, could he make it to them at 32? That would be somebody I would look at.
All right, Michael, we want to thank you for taking time to join us. I know you got to get out of here. You can catch him on GM Shuffle, which podcast is coming out today. I know you guys get another one on Wednesday. And then you'll be doing the draft, I believe, live on Thursday night, reacting to every single pick.
Yeah, we will be. Thank you for having us, Nick. Thank you, Matt. Well, best of luck to the Chiefs.
Appreciate you, Michael. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael. Take care.
You've been listening to 41 is the Mic, presented by KSHB 41, your home of the Chiefs and Chiefs Digest.